Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. Thank you everyone for joining. And I would ask, please, Anae, can you assist with a quick roll call of all of the commission members?
Will this meeting be recorded?
It is being recorded. Sorry.
And I'm sorry. Anae, did you hear my request? I was just hoping you could assist with the roll call of the commission members.
Yes, the meeting is being recorded. I had to state that. I apologize. Let me go ahead and that up. Thank you. So the roll call, Chair Reynolds.
Present.
Okay, Brian Nava.
I'm present.
Jacqueline Knights.
Present.
Aileen Hendricks.
Eileen Hendricks, present.
Thank you. Bryce Stadick.
Present.
Sharon Waja.
Present.
And Brett Yancey.
Present.
Great. Thank you all. We have a quorum. Again, I just wanted to thank everyone for joining and appreciate it. We had a meeting previously, sort of merging items one and two and three on the agenda here. There was a prior meeting held of the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission on May 18th. Those minutes are available in audio form on the Treasury webpage and would direct interested parties to those if you haven't had a previous chance to listen. Given some technology hiccups, the meeting was attended in limited fashion by members of the commission and wanted to be sure that the public finance community at large and any other members of the public had an opportunity to attend the commission meeting, review the upcoming release of the MDAC's annual report and discuss any other matters that were raised during the course of that meeting or otherwise for the good of the public with respect to matters of interest. So we're gathered here today for the follow-up meeting now that we have recognized members of the public finance community in attendance, as was previously noted. So thank you all. With that summary, I will turn it over to the Treasurer's designee, Jacqueline Knights, for an update on OSBG Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program statistics. Jacqueline.
Thank you very much, Chair Reynolds, and thank you, members of the commission, for being present. And it looks like we have all in attendance, so it's great to see you all. In addition to our annual report, which we will review a little later and which has been distributed to each of you, there are a few points that we wanted to highlight and bring to your attention with the goal of soliciting feedback from the broader public finance community that's affiliated with this commission, as well as various other entities within the state, including local governments. And if we could turn to the POB tab on this section of this report, and the POB tab. Great. So the next page, since we last met as a group, as a total group, which was a while back, we have set up POB issuance guidelines to reflect SB 1049, and those were fully implemented in July of 2021. After that, local governments sold about $1.8 billion, almost $1.9 billion of POBs to fund their PERS unfunded liability. We have a summary of those issuances on this page. And fortuitously, for those issuers who came to market in 2021, their rates were very attractive. And some issuers came in June of 2022, and that was in the early stages of the Fed tight money policy, and therefore the rates were good, but less attractive. As you can, as shown here, the issuance has benefited from historically low rates in 21 and modestly favorable rates in early 22. As of June 30th, 2022, there was 3.51 billion outstanding of POBs. The POBs generally use the fund diversion agreement to redirect state aid to the bond trustee to make payments on the POB bond debt service. And this provides credit enhancement to the POBs as a direct payment through the state to the bondholders. And so we position this ahead of the OSBG because the claims against any OSBG that defaults, is it also against state aid? So that's why we preface that discussion. So the next page or section addresses some considerations for the OSBG program. And I will start by saying that since 2008, the OSBG program has been heavily used and has grown. The usage has grown significantly. Treasury does have broad authority to administer the program, including changing the OARs to reflect various guidelines, including fees, et cetera. However, given the intent of the program and the laws for this program, we are interested in input of participating jurisdictions statewide and the local government community. The program itself is designed to provide school districts and community colleges statewide with a guarantee by the state of debt service on bonds issued for school district and community college programs and capital improvements. The guarantee itself allows the issuers to obtain the state's ratings. And in meetings with investors on other state GO bonds earlier this year, one investor pointed out that they love these Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program bonds because they get a slightly higher yield for the state's credit. And we're pleased to hear that they do like the bonds for the state's credit. And we're pleased that that is available to all school districts and community colleges statewide. One of the overarching concerns, just another backdrop, in addition to the state aid that is used in the event of default on the school bond guarantee, on any guarantee program, the treasurer has certain tools at his or her disposal, which includes obtaining funds from the common fund to pay debt service for the defaulting jurisdiction, tapping state aid to such jurisdiction, issuing bonds. We brought those remedies to the state treasurer, but the essence is that none of those tools are effective immediately. Certainly the state will honor the requirement to fund debt service, but none of those tools are immediately available. So there will be, it could technically be a lag between a default situation and a remedy for the default. And clearly the state will step in because that's what we do here at the state. We recognize that the school districts who utilize the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program also provide their general obligation credit and have ballot initiatives passed by their constituents to authorize the debt. So that provides a great deal of comfort. And clearly at 3 basis points, it's probably been identified by bond professionals throughout the state that this represent a cost-effective enhancement to the program. As a sidebar, if there are any programs that exceed, is it 200 million an A?
Yes.
That we have to report that as part of our state disclosure. And so recently we guaranteed a 400 plus million issue and we posted a disclosure of that. Okay, so that's sort of the background. In terms of the actual numbers, in fiscal year 2022, the state guaranteed $9.4 billion, or roughly 24% of all outstanding debt of all Oregon local issuers, and 62% of all outstanding debt of school and community college districts. This is increasingly of concern from debt management's perspective, because the rating agencies are interested in the state's contingent liabilities, and the guarantee is a contingent liability of the state. The fiscal year 2022 debt service and OSBG guaranteed debt was $848 million, or 5.68% of state net general fund revenues, and 18.93% of fiscal year 2022 state aid for school and community college districts. The combined OSBG guaranteed debt service and POB debt service supported by the fund diversion agreement totaled $1.17 billion in fiscal 22, and in aggregate is roughly 26% of state aid for school and community colleges district in fiscal year 22. And you can see the chart with the increase in the debt service component. In the report, the annual report, as we also provide this in the State Debt Policy Advisory Commission report, some of the districts that exceed 100% of their state aid in terms of guarantee obligations include several small districts along the coast. And those districts, Anae, include 3 coastal communities around the Tillamook area, which I'm losing their name offhand. And do you have
Clatsop County and Tillamook County?
Clatsop, Tillamook, and?
And the other one's Multnomah, is 80%.
And the 4 that are above 100% are in Clatsop and Tillamook County. Yes. And Clatsop and Tillamook County. And we have, of course, Multnomah County, which is over 80%. Mm-hmm. Most of the school district that utilize the programs are well below 50%. In fact, many of them have very little exposure. So we see a strong concentration of the guarantee among certain issuers throughout the state. Quite frankly, we brought this to the attention of the treasurer, and no determinations have been made, no OAR amendments have been proposed, nothing has been done, but we have also highlighted the rating agency's increasing concern about contingent debt. So we bring this to the MDAC because we're looking for perhaps input on how we can perhaps tailor this program, but at the same time provide the statewide and broad guarantee that is really the essence of the program. For many school districts rurally, and with small constituents, this is a very valuable program. And you can imagine that there's probably not a lot of state legislative interest in changing that. But we wanted to bring this and that's sort of the conclusion of my presentation with respect to this program, and looking for any input looking to answer any questions from anyone with respect to this program.
Thank you, Jacqueline. Are there questions from any of the commission members with respect to the presentation or considerations that have been raised? Sorry, Brett?
Yeah, I don't necessarily have any questions, but I feel like it is important that I offer just some thoughts from a school district's perspective. And Jackie, thank you for the presentation. I think it was really helpful and informative. The concern I have with you know, potential changes to the Oregon School Bond Guarantee definitely has to do with a lot of our rural districts in the state and their ability to be attractive to investors in the event that they are able to pass some general obligation bonds and other financing strategies. And a lot of times it has nothing to do with the fact that the school district is a quasi-state agency, but it has to do with the local economy of that local school district, where they are not in a position that they can get any favorable bond rating because of external forces that are influencing the situation. Even as large as Springfield is, we have our own struggles due to our local economy, the median income for families, and just all of those external things. The other side of this is, from my perspective, this should be a program that is applauded and supported by the state and the Treasury, because, you know, we shouldn't forget that local districts are a part of the state. The infrastructure of local districts are a part of the state, and without the ability to continue to invest in these infrastructures, we as a state will find ourselves in a really difficult situation, similar to how we found ourselves in difficult situations with dams and bridges and other infrastructures across the state. So I just really want to emphasize the importance of this. I have the utmost respect for Treasury and all others, but from a school district's perspective, the ability for us to get support through the Oregon School Bond Guarantee Program is critical to our success in passing these bonds at at competitive rates and having interest from the market. So thank you again for allowing me to just pontificate a little bit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Appreciate that. And I guess I just sort of had one follow-up question with respect to the observation about rating agencies, and that is, Jacqueline, has this specifically come up? Has the state, in connection with their recent bond issues and rating review, have any of the rating agencies probed on this and expressed concerns that the current level of OSBG is on credit watch is a negative for the state's current ratings?
No, the state is not on a negative credit watch for any of the rating agencies. Moody's did change its methodology about a little bit over a year ago and highlighted the contingent liability. And that's sort of what sparked our concern, really just trying to get ahead of something rather than having the state in a position to be on negative credit watch.
Thank you. Sharon.
I guess I just wanted to clarify, is Treasury staff asking to change the program or asking for direction from the commission or providing an update? I was trying to find, I couldn't find an email with the specific agenda and materials for today other than the updated annual report that was sent out a couple of weeks ago. And so it looked like these slides were just providing updates from the 2022 annual report. So I just wanted to be I wanted to make sure I was understanding correctly what direction staff was looking for from the commission today, or if this is an update or there's recommended changes to the program.
So we're providing really information. I think there is broad support at Treasury for the school district program. We recognize, as Brett mentioned, that this is a really important vehicle, especially for rural and small school districts. It is of concern, some of the types of financings to debt management. Here we see the financings. Some of them include deferred interest, all kinds of structures. We are concerned about it because we're not just looking at the debt today, but the trends in debt. And so we're highlighting our concerns, just as we have with the management here at Treasury about this program. Not that we think it should go away, because it does, we do believe it provides a very useful purpose. You know, in thinking about it, we're not asking for any changes, but I think that there are probably some established school districts in the state that are frequent issuers that could, in practice, access the market with their own credits rather than the state's credit, or maybe with a lower portion of the state's credit, for instance. Because we have this requirement to report anything over $200 million, perhaps consideration might be given to say, let's look at deals under $200 million, because that would cover probably 95% of the school district issuance across the state, if not more. So, I mean, we have not made any proposals to the higher ups, except that this is increasingly a problem for the state, and the higher utilization could give rise to potential credit issues for the state, which would in the end negatively have a negative effect also on the jurisdictions. So our goal really is to test the waters by getting feedback from the school district as to what your tolerance level is, if there are any, based on what we present, if there are changes that you think we can implement, we would want it to come from you, because the state itself is extremely supportive of the program.
Bryce.
Hey, thanks, Jacqueline, for the summary and obviously the whole team for putting together the materials. I guess for a more technical matter, what would be your preference in terms of liquidity backstop in the event of default? Because given the program is here to stay, right, I don't think that anyone really disputes that. They would seem to, just as a contingency plan for just the technical operations, to have something in place, or at least some sort of process in place to where, should that occur, that there would be, you know, a defined procedure or defined, you know, I guess source of liquidity, if you will, until those other measures you outline can be accessed.
Right. We have limited tools at our disposal. The law itself does provide that the treasurer can take monies from the common fund. The treasurer can intercept state aid, which from my perspective is the least likely event to occur, because if a school district is in distress, it just doesn't seem to make sense to take aid from a distressed school district. And bonds can be issued. I have not seen any historical authorization of bonding bonds authorized by the legislature to support the issuance of any debt to provide liquidity. That would be Article K bonds. There are no reserves per se for this program if there is a default. I've spent some time with our accounting folks looking at the annual exposure for the most at-risk districts in this program. And for the three districts, the three most problematic districts, the we think right now there's probably about 1 million to a little over a million at risk if they should default in any given year. Those are the ones with multiple thousands of percent of state aid or in excess of 100%. So we have assigned what we call a PCA code internally, but we're prohibited from building reserves here at the state. We need legislative approval to build the reserve. So that would have to come from the legislatures. We cannot independently build a reserve here.
So for a practical matter, it seemed to be obtaining liquidity from the common fund is the only kind of readily available source. Is that?
Yes, and I don't understand all the mechanics of that, but I understand that it's not as easy as it appears to get that funding. So even though these mechanisms exist,
they have been tested per se, right? Obviously, have been tested. Yeah.
Or are
yeah.
they readily yeah. available? So I think this is you're onto an issue that we brought, that there needs to be more of greater availability. At the same time, I would think that we don't want to promote the idea that the state has funds to address right. Because that could lead to a default. So I think you've hit the nail on the head with this question.
Brent?
Thank you. I just, I think I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure. I don't believe there has been, but has there been any defaults?
No.
That have occurred under the OSBG program?
No. Okay. Annually, Treasury is required to certify whether or not there has been any defaults. There has been none to date that we're aware of. They do ask for certain other certifications, whether or not we think there could be a default. So it's not just has there been, but.
How is that a concern of Treasury that there could be? Or it's close to having any defaults?
Without actually going through the finances of the communities that are heavily overburdened with debt service that have this high ratio, I would think that the reason they have the high ratio is because their populations are low, they get their state aid is low. We looked at those numbers. Should something happen in those communities, like a natural disaster or something of that nature, that is a material that could give rise to default.
Jacqueline, to the extent that the Treasurer's Office is concerned about this, is there any consideration being given to engaging a third-party professional to do some of this feasibility analysis? Because, you know, the state aid that goes to schools funds their general fund operations. Bonds that are issued with the benefit of the Oregon School Bond Guarantee are voter approved general obligation bonds that are secured right. and payable by property taxes. And so I think an assessment of risk related to default on bonds needs to be focused not on state aid coming to school districts from the Oregon Legislative Assembly, but needs to be focused on the Oregon property tax system and vulnerability or the lack of vulnerability in that regard. There's a little bit of apples and oranges here going on in terms of a correlation, in my view, between state aid received by school districts and property tax secured voter approved general obligation bonds, which are, you know, full faith and credit of the school district to levy the amount necessary without regard to anything else to pay the debt service on those bonds.
Right. And so for most of the districts, I think it would be challenging to get a authorization for such a feasibility study. But we can take a look further into those more vulnerable districts and see, you know, what their property tax collections are relative to their outstanding indebtedness. It's my sense that, again, these are coastal communities, most of them, and they probably have some vulnerabilities that would affect their general obligation.
Yeah, I think that before there was any consideration of changing any components of this program, it would be incumbent upon Treasury to make a more detailed assessment of school district vulnerabilities with respect to property tax levies. All of that is disclosed in their offering documents. Carol Samuels, I see that you have your hand raised.
Thanks, Chris, and good morning, everybody. Why school districts may get fewer state revenues is because it's a little counterintuitive, but those tend to be the wealthiest school districts that under the school funding formula get way more money from local revenues than from the state. And given the way the formula works is to set a cap per student, if they're getting much more in the way of local revenues, the state revenue share goes down. So I would tend to agree with Chris that there is a little bit of a disconnect in the way you might be evaluating school districts as to whether they are truly vulnerable, given that state revenue does not necessarily correlate with financial difficulty.
And Carol, given that they're coastal, I appreciate that, thank you. Given that they're coastal communities, do you think that even with the wealth levels that that reduces the vulnerability? I think maybe the issue is more disaster related rather than.
So I would say that in many cases, the districts that do get less or nothing in the way of state revenues, several of them are on the coast, and there may be other risk factors that you might want to consider, but financial strength, mm-hmm. at least under the assumption that no disaster is coming, is probably not one of them.
Well, we will definitely take a look at that. That's a good insight, and we'll, in this, as we continue to review this, take that into consideration. But those are the communities that we're most concerned about, because, as I said, most of the communities are below 50%, and we don't see those as posing any threats. In fact, Nate, I don't know if you have it up, but the spreadsheet of communities, there's probably 10 communities above 60% of their state aid. So it's not a huge number on a relative So statewide.
Brian, I saw you had your hand raised.
Oh, thanks. I think I was kind of beating the dead horse a little bit on this one, because when you made the point about the offering documents, I was even thinking of the Secretary of State collecting all the audit reports every year and putting out the list. And then just public record being what it is, all these school districts are bound by kind of that public record. So I can't imagine if we're doing some type of financial analysis or risk analysis on these school districts, I'd be even, talk about red flags if they denied any of those requests. I mean, boy, that would cause this commission or any other committee or commission or school board to go, why would we not?
About denying requests.
What? Sorry, say that again. Sorry.
There is no discussion at this time about denying requests.
Oh, no. I was just making that point that any information we would need to get that analysis, it should be pretty readily available, or to some extent, you know, I mean, I was at the Secretary of State Audit Service for 12 years. Like, sometimes you get your risk analysis answer when you go to ask for information and it's not available. That in itself could be a risk that would then cause us to talk more about some of this stuff. So again, I think I put my hand down because I was kind of beating a dead horse there, and that I think it's a good idea, and then gives us a little more information. But I don't know what the costs are associated with hiring some type of consultant to do that work, but it might be fruitful for this committee to look at, though.
Okay, now that's very helpful. What Anae has put up here is what we have in the setback report. It doesn't show the general obligation, the debt service collections from tax levy, but it does show we highlight those school districts that are most heavily that has a higher percentage of their debt service relative to state aid. And this is combined with the POBs. And so, as I mentioned, most of the school districts do not present a problem, but, you know, it is a growing liability of the state. It's even absent of school districts, There are two concerns. One, the school districts with the higher concentration of debt service to state aid, but also the growing reliance on the state to provide this guarantee, which the guarantee itself outpaces the state's general obligation bonds that it issues. So there are two factors at play here. And, you know, again, if we continue down this list, you'll see that there are even some communities that have not even utilized the program at all.
It's 8 pages, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking about managing the state's exposure, it's an extremely valuable program. No question about it. It's being utilized in the way that it is expected, but particularly for school districts, we don't have to keep going down, just go back to the top. For school districts that are, particularly rural school districts, small school districts, et cetera. And folks here are studying this matter, and we will try to get additional data to you. So we do appreciate that feedback, and we will continue to review it and also to add additional data to the analysis where the state's exposure lies. As the debt management director, it's our responsibility to make sure that the state's credit remains intact. And so this is part of our duty to report this information.
Jonas, I see you have your hand raised.
Hey, thanks, Chris, and thanks everyone for the information. I guess I just share a thought. I mean, I guess I'll and should mention I'm also kind of speaking in a little bit of my role as a member of the state's Infrastructure Finance Authority, which also authorizes disbursements of state funds, including borrowed funds, to local communities, and so sensitive to the state's credit rating being maintained for that reason. And thinking, Jacqueline, about your concern about the contingency risk, you know, I'm kind of reminded of a decade or so ago at the city of Portland has kind of a unicorn pension funding mechanism that the police and fire pension, which is a pretty large liability, essentially completely unfunded, but supported by city charter approved dedicated tax levy. And when the rating agencies modified their assessment of pension obligations, that was a major concern because that portion of the pension system looked to be completely unfunded. What was an important mitigating factor was having kind of an independent actuarial study that looked at the adequacy of that levy to meet that potential risk. And so I just mentioned that as an example of a potential way. And I think, Chris, you mentioned the possibility of an independent report as well. But just would advocate maybe for keeping that in the conversation, that having that independent study to provide to the rating agencies to support the reality that the risk, financial risk anyway, of the state actually having to pay out a significant amount for those voter approved school levy situations is very, very unlikely. So just wanted to mention that support.
Thank you, Jonas.
Any other comments from any other attending members of the public or commission members on this topic? Jacqueline, any closing remarks on this?
Again, thank you. We appreciate this input. We know that it's a valuable program. It's an important program statewide. And I can tell you that there's no one at the state that is interested in touching this with a 10-foot pole. But at the same time, we have a duty to analyze this and keep it in the forefront. So we will be conducting additional studies on it and to the extent necessary, make recommendations to the powers that be. Not that any of that would be acted upon because we recognize the sensitivity of this program. So we do appreciate your candid input. And the study seems to be like the appropriate next step.
All right. Thank you, Jacqueline. That concludes the item 4 on the agenda, OSBG statistics discussion. And just staying in the hot seat there, Jacqueline, we'll turn it to you for the final update on the MDAC annual report.
All righty. Okay, I think we have a presentation. The first part of the presentation summarizes the report. And since you have received, since you've gotten the last version of the report, we've corrected the table of contents to make sure it reflects the pages and did some clarifying updates on formats. Formatting, right, Anae?
Yes.
So with that said, I'll go through the summary of the annual report of the MDAC committee.
One moment, guys. I'm trying to get it up. It's not. I got too many windows open. There we go.
The report itself, as Anae tried to pull up the document, covers the calendar year in general, except for the sections dealing with POVs and the except for the sections. If you could just go to the summary, because I think everyone has, at least all the commissioners have the report. PBS PowerPoint that we were just in.
You want to record it or something?
I would like the, everyone has the report. So the PDF of the presentation. So the report itself covers the calendar year 2022. And in 2022, from the structure of the report, we have a an executive summary. Essentially, we're all aware that overall municipal debt issuance nationally, at least according to CIFMA, was down about 19% in 2022 from 21. And the leading culprits of that decline were refundings and taxable issuance of debt. In 2022, Oregon local governments sold $3.35 billion in debt, which was $2.51 billion reduction from the prior year issuance of $6.03 billion. And that decline is attributed as follows: $1.4 billion combined decline in current and advance refunding bonds, $869 million reduction in the issuance of taxable pension bonds specifically. As of December 31, 2022, outstanding indebtedness of Oregon local issuers was 38.8 rounded to 39 billion, which is 1.1 billion increase over the 3.7 billion outstanding as of calendar year 2021. And that's good news, because it means that while local jurisdictions issue $3.35 billion, the outstanding debt was higher by a much lower amount. So in fact, that meant that a roughly $2 billion of net reduction in debt overall, right? On the next slide, we look at the local debt issued by counties. Multnomah, these are summaries that's presented in the report. Multnomah County was the highest issuer with 35% of the $3.35 billion issued, followed by Washington, then Lane County. In fact, we see that nine counties represented, you know, the lion's share, and all other counties was $275 million. In terms of issuance by purpose, education was the primary purpose for issuing bonds, then public facilities, general purpose. We also had pensions was very large, transportation, utilities, it's all here. And in terms of the next chart below shows 2022 issuance volume and the number of transactions in dotted lines. So for instance, education with over $830 million of issuance, there was about 26 transactions. For public facilities, there were 22 transactions. However, those were much smaller deals. And we see in transportation, in the middle of that chart, had $717 million in seven issuances. The next slide, and these are detailed further in the report. The next page shows trend in local government indebtedness. So as of December 31, 2022, I mentioned there was $38.81 billion of outstanding debt across all issuer types for local governments, at least according to our bond tracker system, which is, I have I would say about 95% correct with a confidence level 95% per se, because we do the annual biennial verifications. The schools were 13.5 billion cities, and you can see the rest there. The chart on the top right shows the trends in local government new debt issuance. And so we see in 2018, that we see that 2022 is more reflective of 2018 issues. In 2019, 20, and 21, we benefited from the advance refunding craze and the low interest rate environment that was prevailing at that time. And then the slide to the bottom right shows the trend in outstanding principal by calendar year. And again, it's an increasing trend, but nothing of great cause, particularly the difference between 2021 and 22 was not significant compared to the amount of debt that was actually sold, which showed that there was a fair amount of debt amortizing in that year. In the report itself, Anae, can you pull up the report? We have certain other statistics. Let's go to the GIS map page on 16.
Sorry, but you guys have to see my mapping. It's, there we go.
The PDF. Page 16. Okay. This is the GIS map I mentioned earlier that showed the OSBG in pensions and across the state, and the red ones were the ones that we found to be, for lack of a better term, vulnerable. Maybe we'll change that name, but basically you can see with the grading, the red are the highest amount outstanding relative to state aid, the orange being the next level, and the yellow being 50 to 80%, and everything else that's green is below 60%. And then the next slide shows the same GIS mapping, but for community colleges. And then the next slide, I thought I would avoid this, but since we are such a good group and we need some humor in this presentation, we want to look at the rankings among who's who in the state. And so we have Hawkins as the leading bond council statewide, Mesereau and Orrick-Harrington following up, and we have a couple others that show up, Foster, Garvey, and Pacifica. Bond council by volume is represented next on this page. On the next slide, the number of new issues by the top three, I assume that's bond council, and then we have underwriters council, and B. Orrick-Harrington is a top underwriters council, followed by Hawkins, and we have some other names here, Chapman and Cutler, Tiber Hudson, Quarles and Brady, Ballard Spar. Interestingly enough, the Underwriters Council information comes from an outside data services and really just reflect public offerings within the state of Oregon. The other information that we provide comes from our bond tracker database, and this has been historically the case. So we're going to make increasing efforts to make sure that every deal that goes into the system, that we appropriately identify both the bond council, the underwriters council, and all the parties. it seems like sometimes there are shortcuts in the system and folks don't necessarily put in an underwriter's counsel. In terms of municipal advisor activity, I would think for the local governments, Piper Sandler is the leading. Again, we have public financial management also with a significant amount of advisory engagements, followed by SDAO Advisory Services and DA Davidson, Emilio and Company, like the healthcare, and Northwest Municipal Advisors and Cochran and Associates. Another key chart on page 21, MAs used versus not used in negotiated sales. You know, we understand that small issuers don't really like to use the MAs because it's a cost savings issue. But you can see from the bars that I guess there are a fair amount of issuances that were represented by municipal advisors. In terms of lead underwriters on page 22, we have Piper Sandler, ranking one, Jefferies, two, I think that was the Port of Portland deal, B of A Security, Citigroup, other. We should move others to the bottom. DA Davidson, Ziegler Securities, Morgan Stanley, and RW Baird. And then we have statistics based on competitive, negotiated, or privately placed. And in addition to some market updates, that is really the totality of this report. This report is evolving. And so we've changed the format over the past 2 years. We'll continue to take input from the commissioners. Sharon was very helpful in our last meeting in providing input to this, so we made a lot of clarifications. You have the report in front of you for the commissioners, and we can make it available. Can we make it available on the website for the once the commissioners approve it, we can make it available for the broader community to see it. But with this report and the summary, we're asking today for your approval to publish this report.
Great, thank you, Jacqueline. Should I take that your request as a motion for the commission to approve the report?
It is a motion. I would like to motion or move that the commission adopt this report.
And is there a second to that motion?
I'd happily second.
Great. Thank you, Bryce. It's been moved and seconded to adopt the 2022 MDAC report. Is there discussion or questions from any members of the commission with respect to the report? Brian.
Yeah, thanks. I only have one, and just being kind of a little bit of the new guy on the block here. And again, coming with that auditor lens, obviously, I would never expect that we'd ever go in and look at the supporting documentation work papers. You guys are great. I trust that Oregon State Treasury does all that work in the background for us. But maybe just a quick, if it's possible, brief discussion on what the review process looks like for these numbers so that we're sitting there, so that as a commissioner, I go, yep, the Oregon State Treasury, when they edited these numbers in this report, it went through this rigorous review, and this is what it looks like. And so we have confidence that it's complete and accurate to the best of our ability and knowledge.
Thank you. That's important. Data integrity is really an important issue here. Oregon State Treasury, the information that's in our bond tracker system is what is largely reported in this report. So to the extent that it has been entered correctly in the bond tracker, it is it reflects the issuance. In terms of the POB issuance, we also maintain a separate spreadsheet that correctly tracks this. the OSBG program. We do a lot of fact checking. There's some redundancies in our databases. So for instance, when a school district issues a pooled financing, you'll have, say, the Oregon Education District or the OSBA. We remove those because so we could avoid any redundancy from this report. So that's part of the checking that we do as well. What else do we do with this? We also produce some of this information, like the OSBG for the setback report. It is in conformance with the setback report. And that's effectively our checking. On a biannual basis, Oregon State Treasury does a debt verification with all local governments. So we will send out verification reports or a debt summary to all local governments. And we have a team in place that takes the responses and verify that the debt is correct. So last year, we did the biannual debt verification report for fiscal year and for 2021. So we do it in every, next year we will do the
23.
Fiscal 23 verification report next year. Yep. So at least biannually we verify that all the information that we have in our database from local governments are correct. For each local government that does a bond issue, they do provide us with the information. They input it into the system. For all OSBG programs, we ensure that the data is in the system, that it's correct. There are multiple layers of checking and validating data in the system.
I see a thumbs up from Brian, which I'll take as sign off, and that is great and appreciate the background there, Jacqueline, helpful for all of us. Any other comments or questions from any of the commissioners? Seeing none, any comments or questions from members of the public in attendance? Seeing none. All right. All members of the commission in favor of adopting the report, please indicate by a raise of hands your vote of yes.
Yes.
All right. I see a unanimous vote, I believe. How do I unraise my hand now? technology. were there any members of the commission abstaining? Eileen,
I just can't get my hand lowered is all.
Same here. Understand. All right. I'll take that as a unanimous acceptance of the adoption of the report. Thank you all very much. Transitioning to the last item on the agenda, public comment and other business. Is there any comment from members of the public in attendance at today's commission meeting? All right, seeing no hands raised or other technology attempts to communicate on this virtual format, are there any final comments that any members of the commission would like to make on today's meeting?
I want to thank everyone for your comments. It was really helpful. Carol, I will be double backing with you on some of your assessment regarding the communities and information is very important, and the quality of our information is critical. So we'll be following up with you on that, whatever insights you can provide to us. So thank you all very much.
And I also want to note that I will be having the meeting materials and the report posted to the website. I'll make a recommendation to our IT team to have that posted today. So give 24 to 48 hours for that to post to the public website. But thank you, for your help with the report. I greatly appreciate it.
Great. Thank you all. That concludes today's meeting of the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, all.
Thanks.